Hello, everybody, and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Talk. Happy October. Happy spooky season. I am very excited to be coming at you in this new month full of all sorts of monsters. Maybe some different kinds of monsters than we've typically featured on the channel. And I am bringing on a buddy of mine, another monster horror fanatic, the Eldritch Review. And he hosts his own podcast called The Eldritch Review, where he just talks about and goes into the histories of classic horror movies. I'm a big fan of the Universal monster movie cycle, and Parker is as well. I'm excited to have him come on, and we're going to talk about Dracula's Daughter, the, I would say, underrated classic to the 1931 Dracula with Bela Lugosi. So if you've seen that movie, you know it, you love it, the cape, the teeth, the bats. Maybe you didn't know about this sequel, and I didn't, and I am stoked to talk about it. Do a little bit of a deep dive and talk about the good, the bad, and the downright campy. So, Parker, just give me a little invite and I'll bring you on in and we can get started. Alrighty. Perfect. Thank you.
How do you do?
Hey, hey, how do you do?
Not too bad. Hold on, let me come into the light. Emerge from the darkness.
Spoken like a true fan whose favorite monsters are vampires.
Isn't that the truth? I kind of like the ambiance, though, not going to lie. It kind of gives me a creepy aura. I like it.
Yeah, you're just a voice, which is totally fine. You have a great voice. Are you wearing a hat?
I am.
Is it a fedora?
No, it's just a regular, it's a Vans cap.
Oh, hey, that's cool. Man, Vans. I haven't even worn Vans shoes in a long time, but I feel you. I'm there with you.
That's all I wear, man. That's all I wear. If I'm wearing tennis shoes, otherwise I'm just wearing flip-flops. I usually wear flip-flops because they're comfy. But if I'm wearing shoes, I would choose Vans, 100%.
Totally. I rock the Adidas Sambas myself.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So are you in California?
No, I am in Arizona, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've posted about Halloween Horror Nights, so I wasn't sure if you were...
Yeah, so I just did that just because, you know, I do so much about Universal Monsters. I figured I'd be the one to share the news. I've only been to Horror Nights once, and that was back in 2019. I want to go again. You know, I had a really good time. Unfortunately, the party I was with did not really enjoy it too much.
Oh, no. But
I did, so I'm like, screw them. I'm going to go on my own one of these days.
Sorry, what was the theme? Was there a theme that year?
There wasn't like a central theme, but there was like, of course, you know, it's all the like different mazes and stuff.
Yeah.
And the ones we went to were Ghostbusters, Stranger Things, and I actually went to House of a Thousand Corpses because that was like right after I had met Sid Haig at Mad Monster Party. So I was like, well, I have to. And I'm a huge Rob Zombie fan, so I was like, well, I have to. So went through the House of a Thousand Corpses maze, and it was amazing. And actually, I mean, I've been a Universal Monster fan my whole life, but that was actually the first time I had heard about Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. I was
really?
Like, "Is yeah. I was like, is this, oh, like, man. I was like, is this a movie, or is this, like, something they did for, like, Horror Nights? I really wasn't sure. And yeah, I did some research and I figured out that's like a real life movie and that Bela Lugosi was in it. I'm like, dang, where's this been all my life?
Oh, man.
So once I got home, I watched it and I loved it. And yeah, I mean, I just added it to my Universal movie list and here we are.
Yeah. So I love that you brought up that movie. So it's like the opposite with Dracula's daughter. So there's like some parallels here. I've always loved Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman being the direct sequel to the Wolfman. And it's like my two favorite Universal monster movies in the same movie was a dream come true. But it's funny you say you hadn't heard about it because I hadn't heard about Dracula's daughter until this year, which blows my mind because I've also been a lifelong Universal Monsters fan. And I was like, how did I not hear about the direct sequel to Lugosi's Dracula?
And what I love more than anything when it comes to Dracula's Daughter is people's reaction when they figure out about the movie for the first time. You know, like I was doing season two of the Eldritch Review last year. Actually, no, it was this year. Crap. It all just merges together. The beginning part of this year, I was doing season two of the Eldritch Review, and it was back in March. And one of my friends who supports the Eldritch Review, like with all of his being, is like, "Hey, so what you doing with the Eldritch Review?" And I was like, "Oh, you know, I'm just doing Dracula's Daughter this week, and I'm really excited. You know, I have London from Universal Studios Monsters on here. I'm really excited." He's like, Wait, back up, back up." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Dracula has a daughter." I'm like, "Yeah, he does." He's like, "Wait, are you talking about Mavis from Hotel Transylvania?" I'm like, "No, I'm talking about Countess Zaleska. I'm talking about Gloria Holden." And he's just like, "I've never heard of that movie." I'm like, "Ugh, people."
I want to save the conversation around why maybe people don't know about this movie for the end, once we kind of go
Course,
through
yeah.
the film itself.
That's right, Brandy, and a son, Count Alucard, played by Lon Chaney Jr.
I was just gonna bring that up. I literally just today heard about Son of Dracula with Lon Chaney Jr. And
So
again,
good.
my mind was blown. How do these movies escape a so-called, like, I should just like take off this and like throw the whole thing away. I am not worthy if I've not heard of these movies before.
I think what it is that these sequels, like, we love them. You know, we're all monster fans. We know these monsters. We know these sequels exist and we love them. But I think what happened was back then, and also, like, just in general, like, they forgot about them because they were not as popular as the originals were. You know what I mean? Like Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, the Invisible Man, the Mummy. All these movies were so darn good when they first came out, and they were so brand new that when it came to time for a sequel, people were like, "Okay, you know, they either saw it or they didn't, or they forgot about it." And it's so sad that so many of them are so low budget and so forgotten about, but it is what it is. I mean, and that's why I was hoping, like when I did season two of the Eldritch Review doing all those sequels, I was genuinely hoping that like people would have like a, "Oh my God, that movie exists" moment. And I got a lot of that this last season. You know, a lot of people had that, "Oh my God," like mind blow moment. You know what I
That's
mean?
awesome.
Because they don't know that it exists. And it's kind of like, part of me is like, wow, like Dracula's Daughter. I'm like, wow, you never heard about that? But then I remember, yeah, you know, it's not very popular. So, okay.
I'm trying to like justify this now to myself. You're like, Vince, you're just full of excuses. But I'm gonna tell you, Frankenstein's my favorite, followed by the Wolfman and the Invisible Man. So like I bought those DVD sets and that came with all of the sequels. Had I bought the Dracula set, maybe that would have included the sequels.
I could see it. I mean, you know, Universal was very smart about the way they made box sets and collections, and I have no doubt that, yeah, they would have included Lugosi's Dracula, Dracula's Daughter, Son of Dracula. They maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe even Dracula's Brides, if they're really feeling ambitious, you know, they really could have included a lot in there. I don't know, but definitely those three for sure. I think the top three would definitely be Son of Dracula, Dracula's Daughter, and Dracula 1931.
I'm Googling Dracula's Brides at this moment because it's not a surprise that I don't know that movie.
That movie is very, very unknown. Like, you got to know your monster to know that that movie exists.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it a Universal or is it like Peter Cushing? That's the one I'm seeing.
No, it's not Peter Cushing. I forget who plays Dracula. It's not Hammer. It is Universal, but it's not Hammer. Shoot. I don't remember who plays Dracula, though. It's not Lugosi. I know that for sure. It's not Lugosi, and it's not Carradine.
Is it Glenn Strange? No, I'm joking.
No, Glenn Strange is Frankenstein.
I know. Like the third Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it was Carradine, Brandy. I don't think so. I think he was only him in House of Dracula and House of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I have quite an education to do in the realm of Dracula. So where does this okay, so we'll talk about sort of legacy and cultural impact of Dracula's daughter afterwards. I say let's just dive into the meat and potatoes, and we'll talk about the good, the bad. And by bad, you know, I just mean, you know, technically or
Could have been better.
thematically, what just maybe doesn't work so well, maybe didn't age as well, that sort of thing. And
Understood.
then just like pure camp, like what made you laugh? What was really fun about this movie? So like right off the bat, I know you love this movie, but what are a few specific things that really draw you into it?
So the biggest thing I think for sure is the fact that it is a direct sequel to Dracula. You know, my icon. Everybody has their universal icon, the one that they love, the one that they watch all their movies, know all their facts, everything about them. Mine is Lugosi. You know, at bef way before the Eldritch Review, when I was 15 years old, is when I started idolizing Lugosi. And I think like the fact that Dracula had, you know, such a good impact, and now Dracula's daughter is right after, like literally right after. It's crazy because it's like, you know, it made me so happy. I'm like, oh my gosh, Dracula has a sequel. It's amazing. And you know, the biggest part of it, which, you know, I think always draws me in, is the fact that it's Dracula's daughter. You know, sure, Son of Dracula came later. But, you know, the fact that Gloria Holden, who wasn't very well known at that time, you know, this was her first and only monster movie. You know, it wasn't like Elsa Lanchester or, you know, anybody else where it's like, oh, okay, so they appeared twice in the same movie, you know, once as Mary Shelley and then as the bride. Gloria Holden came on screen and that was like her first introduction to Universal Monster Cinema. And I think what's really amazing is like, don't get me wrong, I love Bride of Frankenstein. I love Elsa Lanchester, but it's so sad because they literally robbed her of such an amazing opportunity. She only had 3 minutes of screen time, and that wasn't enough to really sell the dynamic character that was Bride of Frankenstein. But then you get Dracula's daughter, and this is her movie. It's not like, oh, you know, Dracula and maybe Dracula's daughter. It's her movie. She is in it the whole time. She, you know, has the full screen time and she's her own monster. You know, her father just died. She's exorcising his spirit so he can go into the afterlife. You know, she's her own femme fatale. And I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing. And it's so awesome for us to watch this now because back then, females couldn't do that. You know, females were just the damsels in distress or, you know, the love interest or, you know, they were just the foil, if you will, which it was what it was, and it's crappy, but it was what it was back then. But to see again a femme fatale like Gloria Holden, like Countess Zaleska, go on there and just own that screen as Dracula's daughter is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And she could not have done that any better. You know, the whole movie, she wasn't weak. She wasn't like, oh, my father just died. What am I gonna do? Like, she owned it. She owned it. She loved that guy. She loved Dr. Garth. She took him to Transylvania and she was prepared to make that guy a vampire himself had she not been killed. But, you know, I just love the impact Gloria Holden had. I really wish she could have done more.
That was so well put, my friend. Like, everyone throw it up in the chat. I completely agree. Like, thematically, this movie just sucked me in right from the get-go. A, it is the uniqueness of having a strong female character in a monster movie, and she's the monster. And she's fighting. She has a goal that she is seeking. She's like dealing with the shadow, no pun intended, of her father. It starts off really strong, like obviously right at the end, like Renfield's on the floor. You're like, whoa, never mind. You're like, wait, wasn't Mina and Jonathan in this castle? But it's all good.
Where
And
did
I
they run
love
off to?
Van Helsing coming back. Because I think he, I mean, that Edward Van Sloan is, I love seeing him in those early Universal movies. I was like, oh, he's back.
He's the best.
He's much noticeably thinner and a little bit older, but this movie was like 5 years after the first.
That's right.
Gloria Holden, yeah, I absolutely agree. She owned this movie. And she was so good that some of the criticisms I have are just the other, her light is so strong, maybe it dims out some of the other actors. But that's no fault of her own, right? Like, damn, she's good. And she
She
looks
is so good.
great in her costuming. The costumes are on point. I love the scenery too. Like, it's so gothic. It's so like wonderfully foggy and dark, especially in the beginning.
I agree with that statement. Yeah, I think it's interesting, but one thing that I always thought was interesting about the movie is they never knew that she was the daughter of Dracula, and they never knew that she was a vampire, which, not for nothing, they didn't really realize that Count Dracula was a vampire in his movie. But at the same time, they go this whole movie without realizing something's not right with this female. Like, what is up with her? Why doesn't she blink? Why doesn't she drink
Oh
wine?
my God, no. I noticed that like right from the beginning when she is, it must be with those two cops. It's like she's not blinking in her scenes. That's an amazing choice, whether it came from her or the director. Like that was just a
Like
little
her
touch.
father before her.
Oh, so good. What do you think of the those two cops in the beginning? I thought they were
Oh my
fun.
God. They're so funny. They remind me so much of the cops from The Invisible Man, where they're just like the two bumbling, like, I don't know what's going on here. One guy's like terrified because he doesn't know what's gonna happen. The other guy's like, get a grip, grow some balls and go get him. It's so funny. You know what I mean? And you have to laugh about things like that because it's like they do that on purpose, especially the cops and the Invisible Man, where it's like, what's all this then? Shout out to Brandy.
Yeah, I thought the humor, I was like, oh, we're being funny now. I just was seeing like how tonally that would work, and it worked. Like they pulled it off because like they're as like charmingly funny as they are. That scene in the jail, what I found actually rather chilling and eerie. Like they think they see a rat, but it's like, I don't know, it's weird. Like it's very atmospheric and spooky.
It makes you think, really, what was that? And I always like to joke around and say that that was Zaleska, but it could be a number of things. And yeah, it's very atmospheric. I agree.
Yeah, that was really well done. So like the big thing with this movie that struck me and other things I've read and listened to is the, let's say, seduction of Lily, the woman that Sandor picks up on the street. And I thought that this the scene in the studio was so different tonally. Like it, like the movie shifted, and I'm saying this is a good thing. The movie shifted and suddenly became, I thought, really, really interesting and heavy, and like had a lot of weight. And I was like, oh, this is not what I was expecting. This is suddenly much deeper and sexually charged than I ever anticipated in a movie like this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. What are your thoughts? I think that, you know, they really, what I always kind of think about is the fact that this movie was 5 years after its original predecessor. I think censorship rules changed by the year, if not by the month. And I think, yeah, you know, it wasn't able to show Lugosi being a little bit more of a sensual vampire with Mina. You know what I mean? Because it was 1931. This was such a brand new idea. And Dracula, fun fact, was super censored already. So to censor it even more, they wouldn't have a movie.
Right.
So now you have, okay, 5 years later, Dracula's daughter. Okay, you know, what can we do? And so, yeah, they kind of were able to play around a little bit more. And I think that they wanted to. They wanted to try it. And good on them for that, you know. And I think also it speaks true to the more, like, occult side of vampires. You know, vampires are a belief rooted in the occult. And, yeah. Like, Dracula's daughter kind of – it just barely grazes that iceberg of like occultists, but then mm-hmm. you get to Son of Dracula, and literally, like, the way she summons Count Alucard, well, I don't want to say she summons him entirely because he was already there, but for the most part she uses occult practice to, like, you know, bring a vampire or, like, bring something to her, because she's just playing around. She's like, oh, what's this hocus pocus? No, you're going to summon a vampire if you're not careful. And she did.
Yeah, I feel like compared to the other classic monsters, the vampire just inherently, I think, is a sexual, sensual creature mm-hmm. with the biting of the neck. And they don't discriminate between men and women. It's very laissez-faire, free love, right? Which I think is great, and I really just find it fascinating as just a film lover who loves the history of film and knowing what the, you know, the censorship codes were in the mid-30s. It's like how as a filmmaker and a creative filmmaker do you get around those codes? How do you, like, where's the envelope and how far can you push it? What I thought was Dracula's daughter got away with that scene. I think someone just, like, accidentally skipped that page in the script when they were proofreading it, because, like, she takes her top off. We don't, you know, but we see bare shoulders, which was like, unheard of. Yeah, and obviously the same sex relationship. Yeah. I was like, this is
I think thing. It was very, like, you know, they wanted to experiment, and I think, like, you know, my belief, and I'm sure their belief back then too, was like, you don't know unless you try. And I think that, yeah, they must have really felt ambitious, or they must have felt some kind of way. Yeah. Because there's no way, I agree, there's no way that this could have ever happened, you know, in 1931, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah, I just think it makes that scene, aside from, like, whatever shock value, I think it's really effective too. Just like, I was on the edge of my seat. Like, oh my God, what? This is a level mm-hmm. of it wasn't scary, but it was unsettling. It was a level of unsettling that I don't often feel for black and white movies because we're desensitized these days. But even then, like, you don't get that in The Wolfman. You don't get that in The Invisible Man. It's like, this is horrific. This is actually where it earned its horror movie, you know, reputation. So I thought it was great. I think that's what elevates the movie beyond just a run-of-the-mill Universal picture. you know.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, that was good. Is there anything else? Anything else that strikes your fancy about this movie that you want to share?
More than Gloria Holden being her own woman and, owning that screen, I just think that the movie itself couldn't have been any better. I mean, it was so hard for me, and it'll be hard for me tonight doing it again. But when I talked about it with London from Universal Studios Monsters, it was so tough to really figure out what's wrong with it because I'm like, I can't think of a single problem. I mean, yeah, like you said, there are things that could have been better. Of course, there could have been things that have been better. But I'm like, man, I just, it was so well put. It was so well put, I think that the casting was great. I think Gloria Holden doing her own thing was great. I really like one scene I really kind of like, which a lot of people kind of glaze over, or at least try to glaze over, is that scene where she's exorcising her father so that he can go into the afterlife safely. That is one of the coolest freaking scenes I've ever seen because it's so mythically charged. And I think for me personally, I really love mythical things like that, because I believe in that kind of thing. So for me to watch her exorcise her father and to send him to the afterlife and kind of realize, okay, now I have to be you, now I have to carry your mantle, is so interesting. I mean, she's got that giant cross that she couldn't look at because she didn't want to get exorcised.
Which in and of itself I found really interesting, her, because they're vampires, but yet she has this relationship with this Christian symbol. I mean, maybe she does.
I think
I
that,
like it though.
she kind of she didn't look at it, which is interesting. And I think that, I don't know. I don't know.
And but we see that in so many horror movies, just like religious symbols, right? It's the duality. You have the dark and you have the light, and the Countess, she knows the other world, all sides of it, let's say. But that scene,
Absolutely.
I like how you put it, mythically charged. It was just the fire and the fog. It was very captivating.
Yeah, the giant cross, and then like, yeah, she didn't say like a spell in quotes, I use spell, but she definitely said a little blessing over her father so that he can go safely.
That was nice. It's a good scene. I'm gonna challenge you a little bit. I'm gonna ask you to nitpick a little bit, and I can start it off, and you can tell me if I'm crazy or not. But I say all this with love, right? Because it's a good time. The first thing that struck me right off the bat, no pun intended, was the inconsistency in dialects and accents in this movie, where we're
I
in
understand.
London and we have a lot of American accents, but then the Countess herself, just straight up American. Like she didn't have an English, she didn't have a Transylvanian accent. And I just found that interesting.
That's an interesting point to ponder. Now that you mention that, I remember from the movie what you're talking about. And I think, like, I don't know, because, like, I think for Lugosi, it was a little bit more easier. I feel like if he was American, like Gloria Holden was, I think that he probably would have tried to do a Transylvanian accent because he was like Karloff, he put everything he had into his roles. So I think he would have tried, but I don't think he would have like done it. And same thing with Gloria Holden. Gloria Holden is American. She was not Transylvanian like Lugosi was. And I think I don't know. Man, and it begs the question, I guess you can say about, where, like, who's her mother? Why does she not talk with a strong accent like her father before her does? But yeah, no, I see what you mean. You
Yeah,
bring up a good point.
and I thought, like, oh man, like this could have. Well, first of all, I think Gloria Holden trying to do like a Slavic Eastern European accent would have been a bad choice. Like, it would have been cheesy. It would have just been an imitation of Lugosi. I'm glad she didn't do that.
Yeah, it definitely would have been interesting because her regular voice, which I don't know if that's like her acting voice or if that's her regular speaking voice, because you see her in other movies, but she's always acting. You can never tell. Mm-hmm. But if that's her regular voice, it is a very calming, soothing sound.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, great voice control and is strong. But to your point, like, who is her mother? You know, mm-hmm. did she grow up? Was she raised in America?
Right. Like,
I don't know. Like, the movie didn't need a line to justify that. But I feel like they could have just, like, added a line, you know?
Exactly. Right, right.
What if her mom was American? I want to see that movie where Dracula goes to New York City and meets a song and dance girl. That'd be fun.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
So what I said earlier in the beginning was Glory Holden's light, so bright.
Mm-hmm.
I was not taken, let's say, with Jeffrey's performance.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The main man. I found myself feeling deeply that whenever Holden is not on screen and we have to listen to this man talk, it just like sapped the energy out of the movie for me. And I was like, oh, this is this fine, but this is not as compelling as when we have the Countess on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, two things. First thing, that speaks true to her complexity.
Right.
And second thing, I think that maybe that was either on purpose or it wasn't, but I like to believe that that was on purpose because I could imagine that, you know, because it's Dracula's daughter, here we have a strong, empowered, monstrous woman. Now, like, it's like, okay, make the men weaker because, like we said, unfortunately, which is the truth, is that the men always outshine the women. Even if they didn't try, they did it, and it's crappy. But, you know, it's what happened. And I think that if he would have acted a little bit more, he probably would have taken away from her, which, you know, it sucks to admit, but, you know, probably.
Yeah, and you know.
But I think that he also, one thing I said with London is that he really tried to, like, without, you know, saying it intentionally, but, you know, he probably tried to initiate being like, you don't need me. You're a strong woman. You're the daughter of the Count, which I don't know that, but, you know, to us, we know that you're the daughter of the Count. Mm-hmm. You don't need my approval. You don't need me to save you. Because the whole movie, she's like, you know, I need your help to cure me. I need to be cured of this curse, which I don't blame her. I'm sorry that you still have to deal with your father's vampire curse.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, do you really need a male doctor to save you? You don't, you know?
No, which is why, like, I'm echoing a podcast I listen to called Horror Queers, and they do a really awesome, they're from Bloody Disgusting, and they do a really awesome analysis of this movie. And it's just like, by the end, because we're over Jeffrey, because he's this weak male man, his like kind of pseudo girlfriend secretary, she's even more interesting than he is. So you have so many interesting female characters, and that you almost want the secretary girlfriend to become a vampire and go off with Holden. Because they're the most interesting characters, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, it's a good movie for strong female characters, and in classic Hollywood, I'm always there for it because they're not.
I agree. Me too.
That common.
we needed more of that back then, but I'll take what we got.
Absolutely. Just in our final few minutes here, what's something that stands out to you, that's kind of campy about this movie?
Man.
I'll tell you one thing about, I'll start us off. they're like, the movie is funny. It has some really good humor. It also has a couple of one-liners that just like, I was like, whoa, are we in a Marx Brothers movie? Like, this is really funny now, all of a sudden. Gregory Holden's line, I never drink wine.
Like her father before her.
But she does it in like a really a less serious way, if you know what I mean. It was almost tongue in cheek. I liked it though. Like, is you know, it was good fun.
London and I talked about this when we did the episode. I think that she really did that. Like, she didn't want to do it like Lugosi did it because Lugosi made it such a point to really sell that point. Like, yeah, he doesn't drink wine. And I think, like, people remember that because it was such an integral part, excuse me, integral part of that movie. And then you get to Dracula's Daughter 5 years after the original, and it's like, yeah, we know she does. We hope she doesn't drink wine, or maybe she's like her father. Yeah, she doesn't drink wine. I thought that that was definitely funny because I was kind of like, well, duh.
Right. It's a good joke. Yep.
It made me laugh. I talked about it with London. Like, you can actually hear it in my episode. I think I was like, oh, boy, yeah, we know that.
It's good stuff, man. So ultimately, like, we know this movie now. You love it. I'm a new fan. You know, what do you how does it rank among the other Universal Monsters, let's just say? Like, bona fide classic up there at the top, or maybe somewhere in the middle. What's that? Sorry. You hear me all right? Parker? Okay.
Hopefully this works. I switched to data. Hopefully this works.
Oh, okay.
So it definitely deserves a spot at the top, without a doubt. I think that the acting, even though there were parts that were cheesy, like we said. You guys hear me now? Okay, good. I think that this movie definitely ranks like very close to the top. I think that it was on point. I think that the strong Gloria Holden w was just impeccable. And the way I like to say it is that Dracula's Daughter, if it wasn't for Dracula's Daughter, would we have Elvira? Would we have Vampira? Would we have the glamour ghouls that we know and love to this day? Probably not. I like to say that she inspired Vampira, the character of Vampira. But no, it's definitely up there. I mean, it's so hard for me to rank my favorite Universal Monster movies because it's like asking a parent to pick their favorite child. But that movie is at the highest, like the tippity top, as it could be.
Great. I love that. I love people being passionate about anything. Because I've come to this movie a little late in the game, you know, I'm not gonna quite put it in like it's not on the Mount Rushmore of Universal Monsters, but I think it's underrated. I think it needs to be more widely seen. And as far as the sequel, it'd be an interesting kind of discussion to have just about the sequels. Bride of Frankenstein, I think, is the best sequel, but you know what? I honestly think this is probably, I'm gonna say this is the second best sequel.
That's huge. I see. I'm kind of the reverse order, actually. I say Dracula's Daughter is number one, Bride is number two.
That's because I'm a Franken file. Like, I love Frankenstein all day, every day.
I love Frankie too, man. Frankie is definitely one of my favorites, but this movie is just so darn good.
I think it's got a lot of things going for it that stands the test of time in a lot of in ways that a lot of the other sequels just kind of don't.
I agree. I think, like, and London and I talk about this a lot too, which is very much a true statement, is like, it definitely needs more love. It needs more attention, you know, not it. It's so popular, you know, because we love it in the monster community, but outside of the monster community, like I said, my friend Ian didn't even know that Dracula had a daughter.
Apart and it's from a shame Davis. Because yeah, like,
it's very much a shame.
We're in this era of like, of representing women anywhere and everywhere. And you look at the classic Universal monsters, like the bride is always the token woman. And I'm like, now I'm like, whoa.
What about Countess Zaleska?
You need the Countess up on at the Halloween Horror Nights, on any Blu-ray, everything. Like, the bride and the Countess would be best friends. They should do their own movie together, and it'd be great.
I agree. They need more merchandise. What they really need is more merchandise. They need more love. They need more appreciation for Dracula's daughter, because it's such a darn good movie, and the fact that people don't know about it just sucks. And that's why, like, I made sure, because one thing I've been doing these past three seasons of doing the Eldritch Review is I've invited my friend Austin to come on and do monster merch for me in his own art style, because his art style is awesome. And you know, we did Dracula, Frankenstein's Monster, and the Invisible Man in season one. We did the Wolfman, the Mummy, and the Bride of Frankenstein last season. And with this season, all I had left for, like, you know, the big, you know, top five was I had the Gill Man and the Phantom of the Opera left. And I made damn sure I told him, he's like, you know, you don't want another? I was like, oh, I do. And I want Dracula. I want Countess Zaleska. And he's like, who? I was just like, look her up, please. And so he did. He's like, oh my God, I didn't know it existed. I'm like, yep. I'm like, I want that in my merch shop, because I want to be one of those people that spreads the love for Dracula's daughter, to say, look, I've got merchandise. I know this movie exists. Like, buy some merch, because you're not going to get it really anywhere else except maybe T-Fury.
Right. Yeah, I love that. I think that I'm just saying, everybody, check out the Eldritch Reviews podcast and merch. Parker, I think we're going to wrap up here, but is there anything else you want to plug about your channel and what you're doing? You have a really great lineup for your season right now.
This season is going to be interesting. Well, I want to say, before I start plugging myself, I really want to say thank you for your friendship and your support. You know, you have definitely meant a lot to the Eldritch Review. So I want to say thank you for always supporting and always, you know, coming at me being like, I love this episode and all that stuff.
Good.
So that's
really so good. Cool. Well, thank you. The honor is mine.
At the same time, you know, if you're going to support the Eldritch Review, make sure you support Camp Kaiju as well. Your reviews of things are so freaking funny. And I mean, so you got to support this guy too. If you're going to support me, you got to support him.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
For sure, man, for sure. So if you want to support the Eldritch Review, you can follow me here on Instagram at the Eldritch Review, or you can go on Facebook at the Eldritch Review Podcast. If you do follow me on Instagram, all you got to do is tap the link in my bio. It takes you to everything. It takes you to Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, pretty much all the listening links that you could ever want. It also has my merch store, so if you want to buy that Dracula's Daughter shirt I was just talking about, you can buy it there. Mm-hmm. It comes in sizes for men, women, and those who are non-binary. I also have a TikTok. I kind of like to follow trends and just be silly. I keep it monster-themed if I can help it, or horror-themed if I can help it, which I've done very good thus far. It's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So check me out on TikTok if you want to do that. That's pretty much it, you know. Season one was about it started out, I was going to go through the 20s. I was going to do the silent films, and then I was going to move on to the 30s and do it that way. But after meeting this amazing monster community, I completely changed my focus from 20 silent films to doing the classic Universal monster movies, which I might do silent films again someday, but I haven't decided yet. But I love doing the Universal monsters. I think it's a lot more fun. I think it has a bigger community, so I'm very grateful to be doing what I'm doing. So season one is about the Universal Monster original, so Dracula, Frankenstein, that kind of thing. Season two is about the sequel, so Dracula's daughter is on there. Also,
Awesome.
Son of Dracula, shout out to Brandy. Revenge of the Creature, sequels like that that again people haven't heard of or haven't seen yet, so that was really fun. And
Yeah.
then this season, which is currently in the works, it's been a blast so far, and I'm already on episode three, which is crazy. But this season is a completely different season on the Eldritch Review. So instead of doing like monster movies and reviewing monster movies, I'm actually talking about the people who gave our monsters life. So the filmmakers, the actors, the actresses, all the people that brought Universal Monsters to life. So last week I talked about Lon Chaney. This week I talked about Boris Karloff. Next week I'm talking about Bela Lugosi, which I'm very excited for.
Nice.
So it's been such a fun season because, when I do the reviews about like the movies, it's kind of easier, I guess you can say, because it's like my personal thoughts and feelings. Whether I'm talking to a guest or I'm alone, at the end of the day, it's like it's my own personal feelings. I'm sharing me from the heart, from the soul, like I did tonight. But then when I'm talking about these people, Boris Karloff today, Lon Chaney last week, it's like these people had real lives and they really had such crazy stories. And yeah, I've had to really make sure I tell their story correctly because there are so many discrepancies, especially with Lon Chaney, and even more especially with Boris Karloff, because he liked to fabricate his life so much. So,
It's mysteries.
So to finally be doing this season, it's been very interesting, and I really, really can't wait to keep going. There, I have so many people on the list, so many people. They're gonna be like, "What about blah blah blah?" They're on there, I promise.
Jack Pierce. What about
I think Jack Pierce is on there. I can't remember right now, but I know like the main ones are on there. Lugosi's next week. Karloff was today. Lon Chaney Jr. will be coming soon. Claude Rains will be coming soon. Like it goes on and on and on.
Ooh, okay. I love that. I'm so excited for what you got coming up. While I've got you and I've got some fans hanging on, I'm gonna do some quick plugs myself.
Do it.
I'll hype up my own merch. I wear my own Camp Kaiju t-shirt, and we just dropped a new t-shirt that is vampire themed. So it's not Countess, unfortunately, but it's like my own friend does like his own artwork. And it's a super rad vampire, like a moon thing. But check it out. Long sleeves, short sleeves, all sizes. And that link is in my bio at Camp Kaiju. So do check that out, even just to look at it. Let me know your thoughts. And then just
That
like
this
follow.
afternoon, actually, I really liked it.
Awesome. Thanks. I'll tell my buddy. But yeah, just for all you out there, just engage. I appreciate it so much. We talk Kaiju movies like Godzilla, we talk Universal, we talk everything in between. And next week, we are talking about, or Camp Kaiju is talking about the Invisible Man. So, Parker, if you're interested, hit me up. And I'm always happy to have you back. This has been a wonderful chat, and I just thank you a lot.
Oh, well, thank you. Don't tempt me with a good time, man. I could go on longer for about that movie than Dracula's Daughter, man. I have so much love for Claude Rains and that movie, so I'm gonna
All
say
right.
yes.
Okay. We'll make it happen. We're gonna be back here next Tuesday night. We're gonna talk about James Wales's 1933's The Invisible Man.
Darkest movie of the early 30s.
Definitely the highest kill count, I would say, right?
Yep.
Oh,
151 by the end of the movie.
right. We'll save it for the pod. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Thank you, everyone, for hanging out. Until next time.